this in motion.
Hey there, fuck face! British attention to the wrong detail in her obsolete units surrounded by hail.
CITR 101.9 on your FM dial. This is Robin, the Ink Stud Show, and I'm joined by Robert for the Ink Stud Show.
Hello, and good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Radio Land.
The great, mighty Vancouver listeners and the international listeners. I know there's three of you international people, maybe four. Hi, Mom. I'm just kidding. Today we're supposed to interview Dan Nadel, but he's not answering his phone.
He's Trey Elusive.
Yeah. So what up with that, dog? I don't know. Hopefully he gets my voicemail and calls in and joins us to chat about his book, Art Out of Time, which is one of the best reads, best visual pieces of eye candy I've seen in a while. A great collection of unknown comic creators from 1900 to 1969. And the date pretty much represents the times that it covers. And there's a lot of different styles of early news strips a la Winsor McCay to 1950s kind of pseudo EC, the one of this weird alien story, the antennas.
And yeah.
A whole
but it definitely moves out of the fray and beyond the pale in comparison to a lot of the EC stuff. When we get into that sort of turf, you know, and even, you know, even in you know, those are great little guideposts, you know, Winsor McCay, EC. But this, the stuff in this
those
book
are
is,
huge guideposts. It's like putting, like, you know,
Yeah, I mean, those are definitely like well-known comic guideposts that are in the, oh, what's the word? Canon.
In the canon.
but what's in this book is certainly material that got me as giddy as a schoolgirl first time on a pony. It's quite a book.
I saw you when you got it that day. You just picked it up from the library, and literally you were like beaming with excitement.
Yeah, beaming is the word. Not sweating, not perspiring, not glowing even, but beaming.
Beaming. It was
like a beacon.
Like a beacon of geekdom. Mm-hmm. God bless the geeks. But
that's the amazing thing about this book is that it's not just aimed at the geeks.
It's not geeky at all.
You're not just
in fact.
Aimed at the the chicken head eaters. It's aimed at the random, the people you pass by on your way to work. You know, it's a great intro. So it's aimed at the novice and the unjaded. It's quite impressive in that regard, because it's saying, here's a book that's saying, here's a great introduction to the amazing world of comics for anyone who's never seen it, and then for the disenchanted, the people who think they've seen everything, because it is called Art Out of Time. It is stuff that's under-acknowledged, and it's an impressive book, and it's a weighty tome too.
My back hurts a little from carrying it my way here. The interesting thing is, for us, it's unknown visionaries. You know, there's a lot of new comic artists that we haven't seen before. Some of them you had known, but a lot you'd been exposed to for the first time. But the interesting thing for a lot of people is, other than me and you and the comics fans out there, a lot of people just see this book as just, you know, it could be to them, it could be a book of Art Spiegelman stuff. They know that much about comics. So it's an interesting way for people to get into from an odd thing, because it's not produced by Fantagraphics, not produced by Drawing Quarterly. It's Abrams Books, which is a
large-scale book publisher.
Yeah, it's like a Random House type deal.
And it doesn't ever get into masculine power fantasies, really. It's so it is aimed at everyone. It's not aimed at, you know, the 14-year-old boy that wants to wants to find retaliation against the bully through his imagination. No, this is a book of the fantastic, and it's a book of the fantastic with
the
a K at the end,
and the unusual,
and the unusual. But it's not even called Comics Out of Time. It's called Art Out of Time.
Yeah.
It's impressive. And yeah, like I said, but allow me to reiterate.
Go ahead.
Some of these artists in this book, Dick Briefer, then we have stuff as Herbie the Fat Little Nothing, that character.
Now, funny thing about Herbie,
and I've been foraging and burrowing for that stuff for a long time now, and it's hard to come across. And it's nice, this book is actually bringing that stuff to light, which is quite impressive.
And the interesting thing is, you can tell there's a lot of work that went into this, because you were looking at strips from like 1900, 1911, and it's just incredible, this art style. Like this one strip in there, they, for the reproduction on the cover, they blow it up to about, I don't know, five times the original size for this picture of a frog on the cover.
It's not, I don't think it's a frog. I think it's a what's-it.
A what's-it?
I think it might actually be a what's-it.
And what's a what's-it? It's an odd green guy that kind of looks like a frog, but isn't.
A wiggle much. It's a wiggle much, actually, not a what's-it. It's a wiggle much.
And what's the strip it's from?
The wiggle much. By Herbert Crowley from 1910. And it's a strip that defies, it truly defies perspective. Luckily, there is a horizon line to keep things grounded. But that's the only thing that keeps it grounded, because all these strange characters like Rubberoo Mike, the chief transfer man, don't believe in gravity. And it certainly defies time, space, and gravity, and you get that feeling as you read it. Yet it's done in poetic verse of the era, 1910. How this got published, I'll never know, but I sure am glad it did, because it's incredible.
It's surreal artwork before really the big surreal movement, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you have lyrics like, absurd, absurd, it's quite absurd, but here I am, the ding-dong bird. We get an image of the ding-dong bird, which is a bird that can light the sky.
I think Dr. Seuss has something to say about this book.
This bird itself is a beacon.
Art Out of Time, Abrams Books. You can find it at some of the finer comic shops in the city. I will say RX. Actually, I don't know if they have it right now because I went to pick up a copy and he didn't.
Maybe Lucky's.
Lucky's.
The comic shop on 4th.
Go talk to Gabe.
All three are quite great stores.
Books.
Another great store.
Because it's from a different publisher, chances are you'll find it in bookstores. I know Oscar Books has it.
And for those of you who are eating on a budget, I know that the Vancouver Public Library also has a copy.
You eventually returned your copy.
I returned my copy. I signed it out of the library and then went, I need to own this. And it's rare that I say that about a book, but it is truly a fantastic art object. Fantastic with a K, I must
with
add.
With a K. CK or just K?
CK. Yeah. Okay. We trail off with a K, like magic.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Like magic with a K.
Aleister Crowley doing fantastic.
Mm.
Wasn't he the one that said magic's got to be with a K if it's real magic?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, none of this top
None of this hocus pocus stuff. Alakazam.
Alakazam, Alakazoo. On that note, I'm going to play a quick track.
So this book is not elusive, but Dan Nadel is what we're trying to say.
Yes, and we'll see if we can track him down. Inkstead CITR 101.9 FM. I guess it's about 18 past. I'm going to play... by the way, we started the show with Wilco, Theologians, and then The Fall. The song was Classical. I think that's off the Hex something.
Yeah, album. That one. Yeah. That one, yeah.
And these are all picks of Dan's. Dan, where are you?
Let's try to track him down.
And now I'm going to play Neil Young, Walk On. I don't even know which album it's from.
I believe that's from On the Beach.
On the Beach.
Great album.
That sounds right. Yeah. CITR.
Well, that was Neil Young, Walk On, and here we sit on and dream on. My name is Robert Dayton. I am a guest co-interviewer here with Robin, but our interview subject, as Robin is desperately trying to reach, is unreachable.
Desperate like a 17-year-old boy at a call girl house.
Those were the
desperately
days.
Desperately trying.
Well,
or desperate like a comic geek at a call girl house. here's a
those
story.
Are the days.
Here's a totally unrelated story that I'm going to tell. Apparently, for the pro book by Amanda Connor and Garth Ennis, that Jim Steranko went on about his hatred of their doing it. It was a
What's the deal? Now Steranko is a legend in comics, a master illusionist and escape artist, and
speaking of magic,
and one of the most amazing superhero
graphic designer, incredible graphic designer. He actually is quite known for his graphic design skills beyond his comicking abilities.
Well, he certainly mixed op and pop into his comic work, so the design sense was pretty apparent there. He's quite revered. He's one of the pillars, is he not?
He is a respected pillar, and respect is deserved.
So what he says goes.
But he's kind of given himself the reputation of a crotchety old man with his comment on the pro. It's a Garth Ennis comic, quite offensive.
What's the deal with the pro? What is it?
It's a prostitute that gets superpowers.
And the problem being?
It's a prostitute that gets superpowers.
Oh. Okay.
It's excellent. It's hilarious, offensive. So for promotion for it, Garth Ennis and Amanda Connor thought, well, let's hire a prostitute, bring her to the San Diego Comic Convention, and just pay for the whole day to give fans oral release. And they were going to do this. And their thing was, like, they didn't think anyone would go for it. They're like, everyone's going to be too shy. And I probably agree with that. But unfortunately, San Diego Comic-Con officials found out and nixed it.
Busted.
Yeah, I think that is the best comic promotion plan ever.
That's an amazing promotion. Well, I mean, this wouldn't be the first time. I mean, you know, there's been things that have definitely veered into that turf. I mean, I remember, I think Madonna did a promotional car tour of New York where she would bring in eager, mostly of Latin American persuasion, male...
Spanish Harlem.
...fellas into the car. So I don't know if they were fans before they went into the car, but...
they certainly were afterwards.
But really, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it is a trade, like, you know, it's a trade with its pros and cons like any other. But to see someone of that line of work get powers, I hope they treat it realistically. I mean, have you read it?
Yeah. It's funny.
Is it just a funny laugh, kind of making light of the whole thing, or is it fairly realistic?
Well, I mean, what do you want for realism? I mean, she provides release for a Superman-type character that ends up blowing a... part of a wing off a plane, and he's trying to save the plane but his, you know,
so
tights
it's more
around
slapstick
his ankles.
Sexual, yeah. Carry on gang bedroom farce comedy,
yeah,
with superpowers. So that's all it really is. Oh, that's too bad. It's a shame it doesn't
what would be
strive
a realistic...
to be more than that.
What would you see it as?
Well, I mean, the profession's an interesting profession, so you'd want to know, you know, someone dealing with the profession interestingly enough, you know, it's and how the person lives, the effect the profession has on the person, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and then throwing onto that superpowers. And I think that you could really have a whole world opened up there. I think it'd be a very fascinating comic book. But I think opting into the carry-on gang world is just well, whatever.
So
I
do mean, you agree it, with Steranko? Is it the downfall of comics?
No, I think it's an interesting concept. It's a shame I haven't read it. I'm just taking what you say, and it seems like a great idea for a comic book. It's a shame it wasn't handled in a more
tactful.
No, not even tactful. I don't think even tactful. Subtle, nuanced, and then all the comedy would come from there. Because, you know, base sex comedy can be pretty. Gets pretty tired fast when sexuality is a pretty interesting a minefield, especially when mixed with super heroics. But and it was dealt with in a realistic, you know, I mean, even though it is of course, you know, super heroics, but if the actual subject, you know, the actual her profession was dealt with in a realistic light, and then added that on, I think it could still be very, very funny, and probably much funnier than the way they handle it. It's a shame.
Well, I still recommend reading it. It is one of my Garth Ennis. For all his cheesy humor, he's a writer I'm quite a fan of.
Mm.
Preacher, do you ever read Preacher?
I did sit down and read a lot of them, and it was okay.
It was okay.
It was all right. Yeah, it wasn't bad.
What's been
I
your...
mean, sometimes it was... it was. Sometimes it was... there was always something that thankfully...
missing?
Redeemed it.
Oh, okay.
There was always something that redeemed it. It could have just been a lot of stupid jokes, but there was a lot of... I think he is a gifted writer, and the way he would tie up storylines and the way he would do characters definitely redeemed it.
Now, if anyone wants to butt into our conversation, you can call us at 604-822-2487. The phone lines are open. Operators are waiting to take your call. By operators, I mean me. And what I'll probably do is bring it straight on the air. That'll be fun.
Yes, it's you could be our interviewee or the interviewer. You could be both.
Do you have
depends
questions
on which
for
side
Robert?
You like.
Do you
submissive like... or dominant. Decide.
Call back in. To the pro. What are some recent comics?
The comic pro.
The comic pro.
Well, I'm not... I have to admit, I mean, The Preacher is enjoyable, but generally I'm not really a Vertigo fan. I'm not a fan of, like, DC trying to get edgy sort of imprint. It's just like... It's limited. I mean,
Alan Moore did it, and it was done then?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was enjoyable comic books.
Did you read The Swamp Thing Runny did?
Oh, yeah. When it came out, I already had a subscription. I was just past diapers, and I had a subscription.
Oh, wow.
And I read it from the beginning, from the start, and then all of a sudden this long-haired, long-bearded mystic takes over and
back
and
to the magic.
Even at that young age, I noticed something, so that there was something different going on here than Martin Pasco's writing. Although those Swamp Things did have some interesting, creepy moments before. But generally it was pretty standard comic book stuff.
I liked them. I remember as a kid getting that the Alan Moore Justice League issue from his first storyline, always loving it.
Yeah.
And I was probably, you know, a wee pint-sized toddler.
I was going, why does Firestorm look so weird?
Why does everyone look weird? They all have weird lines on their faces.
Yeah.
John Totleman and Steve Bissett.
Steve Bissett. They were a great team. Yeah, it definitely had a very interesting look. And they actually came on before Alan Moore started his run as well.
Yeah, just about 3 issues before. Yeah. The interesting thing is some, you know, comics criticisms maybe is DC, you know, calls out their horror line. But really, Swamp Thing was the only horror comic.
Mm.
Constantine, too, for the most part, until about 15, 20 issues in, and then he suddenly started hanging out with pagan mystics and, was running around naked looking for ley lines. Ley lines? Ley lines? You know,
he's got Sandman. Sandman dealt in realms of horror, and there was Cain and Abel, and a lot of goths liked it, and goths love horror.
You know what, though? I think they dropped the horror pretty quickly and just made really... now, I'm using this term...
fantasy.
I was just going to say really gay fairy comics.
Mm.
No, I'm not using this term to disparage people.
You mean happy, the original.
Yeah.
Because I'm taking the word gay back, by the way.
Yeah.
It's been altered too many times, and I'm bringing it back to its original
I don't know. It's just,
meaning
it's just
having it re-enter the lexicon as happy.
I like...
taking the rainbow back, too.
Taking the rainbow back? You're giving it back to the Irish?
Yes.
In fact,
I'm writing a protest song right now called Give the Rainbow Back to the Irish. It's pretty exciting.
I went to a great Irish pub in New York that makes me think of New York. So what are some recent comics, though, that you've been enjoying since we're...
Oh, boy. That's a loaded question.
I know every week you're reading 52. Is it meeting the standards?
That's I can't say guilty pleasure, because I don't believe there's any such thing as guilty pleasure. You really shouldn't feel guilty for it. But what I don't feel guilty for is not buying it. I'm certainly more than happy
you feel
not
guilty
to purchase
for
it.
Rubbing your oils on the cover and then like sticking it back on the shelf.
Dare I say it? My hands are almost always clean due to an obsessive compulsive disorder. So you don't have to worry about me with your lending library of bound editions of Dazzler.
You've heard that here. If you want to, if Robert's going to borrow your comics, he will be careful.
Mm-hmm. I won't sully them. They won't
That's
be sullied. I think the first thing that comes to mind that really set me gleeful, and I know it's not in the realm of new, but in the realm of reprint, but boy, the reprints have been amazing lately, and that's the Popeye volume.
That's right. You were talking about that the Seeger
the Elsie Seeger, the original Popeye. It's just mind-blowing. Popeye is my favorite newspaper strip of all time. For those who are unfamiliar and think that Popeye is just sort of a spinach guzzling, you know, sea salt drunk sailor who has
salt. I'm drunk on salt.
Yeah, with his little
I got
nephews.
High blood pressure.
Yeah, with his little nephews and Bluto. No, it's the original Popeye is not that. That's just
and
really
it wasn't called Popeye the original strip.
No,
it was the
Thimble Theater. See, Popeye got more and more bastardized and Xeroxed over the years to become that. But what Popeye was originally, in fact, besides the strip itself, I think the closest anyone ever got to getting what Popeye was right would actually be the Robert Altman movie.
Which was written by?
Jules Feiffer.
Comics
with
creator.
A soundtrack by Harry Nilsson. Great soundtrack. You might have heard one of the songs. I think it was on the soundtrack to Punch Drunk Love.
Yep.
But yeah, great soundtrack, good movie. And they get that right. They get the whole... It was a continuing adventure with all these characters and its own language. You know, Popeye had his own language, and they were lovable characters that were, dare I say it, crusty. They were crusty. They weren't rich, but there was something. But because it was crusty and dealing on this very ruddy level, certain elements of the odd could come into these continuing adventures and really throw things awry, and
nope.
Very comical that way.
What year does this book reprint?
1930. Wow. 1929, actually. 1929, when Popeye makes his first appearance as really just an incidental character.
That
a sailor guide.
A sailor.
But fan
sea
reaction was
drug.
Strong. And the letters came pouring in, and Elsie Seeger had to bring him back. Now, Thimble Theater was already halfway through its run. It started in 1921. And
wow.
Popeye wasn't introduced till years later.
Well,
and then Seeger died in 1938.
Oh, wow.
And the Fleischer cartoons were already happening by then as well. I think those were mid-30s. Those are great. Those animated Fleischer cartoons are something else. You can buy those at the dollar store. I mean,
which actually spawned off a lot of pretty talented cartoonists and creators,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to take a quick musical break.
Okay, it's not... It's not Fugazi, is it?
No,
I hate Fugazi.
I pulled up this band, Canned Ham. Do we have any?
Oh, no.
No?
No, go for it.
Which
go
track do you want to hear? Erotic Thriller. It was a thriller. Let's see if MySpace is...
One of my alter ego's songs, right?
Yeah, Mr. Robert Dayton, rocking the mic. Okay, you know, the thing that bugs me about MySpace is...
But it's actually not your space, it's Murdoch's.
Is it Murdoch's?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just, you know, if you go to, like, a big band, like Snoop Dogg, his songs will work right away. But, I mean, your site, not to say you're not a big band,
yeah,
but you're not Snoop Dogg, and I'm having...
I think it's a CIA plot, because they did develop the internet, and this is what it's led to. So I do apologize.
What is it that LaTigre said? Get off the internet?
Oh, God.
It all leads...
I saw them. Well, a couple songs, then I left.
Oh, it's a good show.
Mm.
No? Oh. Are we going to fight over music? Okay. You know what? This is really bothering me.
It's MySpace, not working. That's okay.
Damn you, MySpace.
Nobody's even calling. What's the number again?
604-822-2487. Now, another book we can actually mention, speaking of Mr.
Are we
going to
give this guy more hype, even though he's a no-show? I mean,
yep.
It could be... I guess... I mean, it could be
we're gonna make him feel bad.
An ailing aunt or something. There could be a serious reason for this, but
I know. And you know, stuff happens to people. I want to mention.
Oh, I've had stuff happen to me. You've had stuff happen to you. It's called life experience.
What doesn't hurt makes you stronger. Mark Newgarden's only collection of strips. Mm. Only collection. This is it. Mark Newgarden, known pivotal part of the whole Raw movement. The Great Cut Up Nancy Strips. This is the first collection of stuff he did that came up for Fantagraphics. I think it was last year or 2005. Mm-hmm.
Within the last year, I believe.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's an amazing collection. It's called We All Die Alone. So that will tell you where the humor is stemming from. It's dealing with the big taboos. We All Die Alone.
Oh,
sure. You want to play that one?
Oh, no, it stopped.
If I knowed that this would have happened, I would have brought some musical selections.
I would have too. I just brought the music.
Let's talk more about this New Garden book. It's pretty amazing. It's got a velour
cover is what my girlfriend says.
Velour. But I
think it's velvet.
I think it's velveteen.
Black velvet.
Because he has an obsession with clowns and clown paintings. So I think that's why the cover is velveteen. In fact, what I really like about this book is that the last fifth of the book is inspirational material. When you wake up in the morning, you just read one little saying and it gets you going for the day. No, it's actually inspirational material that inspired him to do his comics.
Sorry. I thought you were like...
I don't mean to...
I was like...
True. That's another book I've been reading. it's a handy little thing. It's got the crying towel. A lot of pictures of clowns and some amazing stuff. Andy Kaufman's in here. And then, of course, the first four-fifths of the book are his strips. He would definitely turn the gag on its head. That was kind of New Garden's thing.
His cut-up, it's a whole cut-up style. It's like Burroughs meets gag strips.
Mm-hmm.
Is that... Or maybe Geisen meets gag strips.
Maybe. I definitely know that with the gag strips, sometimes the gag strips, the illustration would take up a tiny corner of the page, and then the text itself would go on for paragraphs.
Did you actually read any of that text yet?
Oh, yeah. I've read all of it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You inhaled it?
Twice. No, just...
Thrice!
No, just once. Just once. It was pretty good.
I tried reading one of the texts below one of those strips, and it was just a... I don't know.
They do actually have a resolve. They resolve themselves quite nicely.
You gotta wonder about the amount of work...
They're actually quite well done. The text, if you do bother to actually read all that text, it's really not that much. In the world of gag cartoons, it's excessive. But it's quite entertaining.
New Garden's one of those creators that kind of fell through the cracks of comic interest because he's just... I guess he's kind of a recluse and never really had any stuff collected. The closest of recent collecting is Ivor Brunetti's epic collection, the graphic storytelling anthology put together for Yale Press.
Which I hear is just an amazing volume of great comic work.
It's incredible. You know, and I've got a pretty substantial amount of comics. There's not a lot that I don't have. And there's a lot of stuff I don't have in there.
Well, I hear that where the Smithsonian blew it, Brunetti picked up the slack with that book and really took it home.
Yeah,
for modern cartooning.
Well, that's just it. It's a really neat look at modern cartooning and modern... It's just so many great, great choices in stuff.
Mm.
You know, not even like the creators, but the work by the creators. I mean, he's able to pull something from Chris Ware's epic Jimmy Corrigan book, which is, I don't know how many pages, 400? The thing is huge, and he finds four pages in there that work beautifully by itself. I mean, the whole thing works beautifully.
Just
all the
stand
pages.
Alone.
And it's great. And it's like Chris Ware is one of those people that are really weird and fanatical about having how his stuff is displayed. And he works well with that. I guess they're friends.
And Brunetti, being a cartoonist himself, he works that side of the fence. So he knows what to do with these pieces.
Yeah.
And he knows how to present them.
Okay, but the reason... Actually, I completely went off topic. The reason I wanted to mention the book is because when you take off the dust jacket, it's on the back and the front of the book... is New Garden's cut up one side Nancy and the other side Bazooka Joe. Like, totally, you know, looking weird and destroyed. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. And on this, the New Garden book itself, it features, besides being in velveteen, it features a big-nosed gentleman where his nose sort of cuts off, and you can just keep getting more copies of this book and connecting them because the nose continues on.
You can
once
tell
you connect the copies.
Whoever designed the book saw a lot of them together in store.
Just masterful design, really, because that's New Garden has a certain cyclical nature with some of his work that pops up, the whole cycles of things that he does, whether it's he did a whole series, for example, that were of toilet paper.
That's right. That
designs.
Stuff is great. It's all he got people to mail in toilet paper wrappers that they'd found in New York. It's not
just
designs.
New York. Some are over in Europe. It starts out in New York, to 12. I think there's some that were found. Oh, I thought I read a couple that were filmed in. One was found in Tokyo, but mostly New York. Yeah,
quite
and beyond.
An usual choice for strips, and it's. It takes that kind of, you know, 50s. Atomic lifestyle, atomic family lifestyle, and plays with it.
Yeah, and it also looks at thing. Yeah, it really does. It looks at the atomic family lifestyle product that goes unmentioned by the atomic family, because defecating is kind of a taboo, and yet it shows the elegance of the package design, which is used for defecation and in the most clean and efficient manner possible. But it shows this delight package design that one would normally overlook. I know there's some great websites out there, for example, of manhole covers. Because those are really well designed as well, and so you get to see the variety of design of something that's. Innocuous yet taboo, and they're all placed together, and it works really well.
It's a gorgeous collection.
Not to mention the fact that he's the man behind the Garbage Pail Kids. So you have all these designs.
Do you know about the debate?
Kids. What's that?
There's a debate.
There is a debate
between Art Spiegelman and Mark Newgarden. Both claim to be the men behind the Garbage Pail Kids.
Hmm.
In the Vice magazine's comic issue. Now I know you're not a fan of Vice.
No, I live a pretty vice-free existence.
They did do a comic issue that was put together by Johnny Ryan, and it had a beautiful cover by Al Jaffe. And in it, they have an article, a small interview, I think, with both Spiegelman or Newgarden, or maybe just Newgarden. I can't remember. But they both claim to create the Garbage Pail Kids.
Hmm.
So in this, it referenced that Spiegelman worked for Topps earlier. I think he even worked there around the same time, but the Garbage Pail Kids was... definitely Newgarden's concept.
Because it does show an original Garbage Pail Kid throwaway design, if I'm not mistaken.
Why don't you read off some of the names there, Robert?
Oh, of the Garbage Pail Kids? It's come to that. You know, I have to admit,
They're awesome.
I have to admit, Robin, that when you asked me to help interview Mr. No Show.
Dan Nadel?
Yes, the fellow who's not on the line right now. When you asked me to help, I was, first of all, I was touched and honored. But second of all, I was quite shocked because what I thought that this show was, what I honestly really thought that this whole show was about, was reading the daily funnies to the war-torn and poor who can't get the comic section themselves.
Helping out those in Bosnia?
Yeah. And so I thought I might have a turn at Mary Worth or Judge Parker and really get the comics.
So you don't
want to
read off the names of the characters, do you?
Of course. Well, that's a great thing about these comic shows. You know, it's like everybody close your eyes and imagine what it looks like.
It's not like you're reading off the strip and going, well, now Batman's climbing up the wall and, Joker's spraying acid at him.
Laughing acid. Okay, Fat Matt, Damaged Dawn, Tommy Tomb, Blasted Billy, Graffiti Petey, Jolton Joe. You know, I found a secret cache of these. I won't say where because it's a secret. And once I reveal it to you,
they'll all be gone.
Yeah,
I'll
you'll just
gone.
Have to rent the video, The Secret, for yourselves, and then you will really learn about the Garbage Pail Kids and in a most positive way. But
we're not talking about the Garbage Pail Kids movie.
No, this
That's
one,
this horrible.
Is, this is, I think, the sequel. It's called The Secret. It's a bit of a self-help thing. But let me tell you, Garbage Pail Kids movie, I have to tell you, was actually Anthony Newley's last role.
I don't know.
That was his last role in movies.
I don't
the
know.
The late, great Anthony Newley. You don't know Anthony Newley. Anthony Newley, singer, entertainer, Brit, well-regarded Brit who dated Joan Collins, Diana Doors, and he was also a great songwriter and singer. Stop the World, I Want to Get Off. With Leslie Bricusse, wrote the entire Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory soundtrack.
He's a
also inspired Davy Jones' vocal style of the Monkey and David Jones, who later became David Bowie. So he was a real vocal inspiration and lyrical inspiration for both of those guys. Anyways, that was his. He was obviously a real a great entertainer and very British, you know, in the rooty tooty doo way. And his last role was the Garbage Pail Kids movie. That was his last role.
Well, maybe I'll sit and watch it later.
No, it's terrible.
I probably won't.
But I did find a secret cache of a Garbage Pail Kids stickers for my family. That's the great thing. That's the great thing about the marketing. You go, oh, maybe I'll get my name, or maybe I'll get the name of a friend or family member.
There you go.
And they'll make gifts, and they show up as repeats.
Repulsive Robert.
Was that one of them, or is that just a character trait of me in general?
Oh, ladies, my name's Robert. Do you want me to sing you a song?
I don't think Repulsive Robert's such a bad thing. I mean, look at...
it would be better than Roofie Robert.
Exactly. That's nasty. Repulsive, that dates back to Repulsion with the Hubba Hubba Catherine Deneuve. So hence a positive connotation there. But then that moves into the turf of Polanski, which would be more like Rufus Robert, I think. Huh?
Yeah. Roofies.
Oh, yeah. Not Rufus, because that would be Chaka Khan. Chaka Khan.
Boy,
are we going through the names? You know, we could get so... Let's just do, you know, 500,000 degrees of separation. Just bring it back home.
From Chaka
let's
Khan.
Bring it back home.
Back to...
This is like a bad 1987 Dennis Miller routine.
They love him in Germany.
Yeah.
In Germany. Yeah. That was David
Hasselhoff.
In right-wing
Germany, boy. Anyways...
Oh, we have a call.
Do we have a caller?
We have a call.
God.
Let's bring it on.
Rescue me.
Okay. This is Ingstad. Who we got with us?
Robin?
Yeah.
Hey, it's Dan Nadell.
Oh, hey, Dan.
Hey, I'm so, so sorry. I got food poisoning.
Oh, no.
Yesterday, and I've just been zonked out, so I completely forgot, basically. I've just been sort of laid up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We've been
gushing on and on about the Art of the Time book and the New Garden collection.
Just now.
So you're actually on air now. I'm probably right on it. I'll let you know.
I'm on the air now. Yeah. So
is that okay?
Taken ill.
Okay.
Here I am.
Well, we'll ask a couple of questions. We got about 10 minutes left, if that's okay, if you feel up for it.
So you can only answer in monosyllables because it's 10 minutes. We got to make it tight.
Okay.
There'll be yes or no rapid fire questions.
Okay.
Just kidding.
Now, I'll let Robert start with them because.
Hi, Dan. I'm Robert.
Hi.
I'm Robert Dayton.
Hey.
I'm guessing because I'm a real fan of the Art Out of Time book. It's a great book.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, and I just wanted to know, now obviously, I mean, the book obviously fulfills sort of a double function for audiences, for people who are comic book fans already and don't know of these unjustifiably unknown people, and also for the novice, for the people just who don't normally read comics. Would I be correct there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's for both. It's sort of... Yeah, for people who are pretty far in and looking for something new, but also just for anybody kind of interested in unusual graphics and kind of fantastic stories and things like that. I mean, I think it sort of cuts both ways.
Mm. Was there a conscious decision to avoid the word comics in the title and just use the word art? Because I know I have a lot of art-related friends who have gravitated to the book itself because they don't normally look at comics.
No, I mean, it just seemed like, well, the subtitle is Unknown Comics Visionaries.
Mm.
So it just, I don't know. No, it wasn't conscious. I kind of made up a title that seemed to work, and then that's what it was. Yeah. No, I wouldn't say it's conscious. Although I like the kind of generality of art, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of what it fits under.
Keeps it in a couple of different ways to look at it. Now, a couple of questions about some of the creators in there that you've kind of pulled out for stuff. Because one thing that we've noticed is Fantagraphics kind of jumped on and start publishing some of the stuff that was in that book.
Stardust by Fletcher Hanks and the Gene Deitch book that's coming out.
Gene Deitch, Deitch, well, those books were in the works already, like at about the same time I was working on mine, although I found out about them as I was pretty far in. So those are sort of long-standing projects. But yeah, I think it's great. I mean, I wrote a little essay for the Gene Deitch thing, and Paul Karasik has been into Fletcher Hanks forever and ever and ever. So he's got bragging rights on Fletcher Hanks, that's for sure. Yeah, I think it's great. You know, the more sort of unusual historical material that's published, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
It's pretty exciting that all this is now is further coming to light. Like, even that book, there's that book, Cartoon Modern, that really talks a lot about Gene Deitch as well.
Right. Yeah, that's a really neat book. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that book very much. I mean, it's really good. I think that, you know, at a certain point, you kind of, not exhaust, but, you know, Harriman and McKay, while there's still a lot of, like, historical research to be done, and stuff like that, there's, in a general sense, known quantities, and so people start looking for something else, and you kind of, the same trajectory as me, really, kind of behind the established greats and see what else you can dig up that's worthwhile and interesting and groundbreaking.
Now, some of this stuff, I've been searching for, like, Frankenstein, the Dick Briefer stuff for a while, and Ogden Whitney. Do you know of any... Have you heard of any? Are there going to be more reprints? Have you heard anything on the old pipeline?
No, I haven't. I would love to do something with Ogden, the Ogden Whitney stuff. The rights are a little tricky, but
yeah, I guess you have to find the owner, which is about 20 different names for one man.
Right. Exactly. And ACG, which is the comic company, was bought by a guy named Roger Browden, who I've been in touch with. And you know, it would be interesting. I would love to do Ogden Whitney, for example. And Frankenstein, there was apparently a book that came out recently. It's
what?
Very, very poorly done. It's sort of like grayscale Xerox. It's apparently. And it's not too exciting.
And it's all Dick Briefer.
Oh, Dick Briefer, yeah.
Ah.
But, no, both of them really, really need doing. It's just, like all these things, the market will only take you so far. I'm doing a Rory Hayes book for Fantagraphics and a Harry Tuthill book for Fantagraphics.
And
well.
Another book, sorry?
What's that?
What was the other book after Rory Hayes?
The Bungle Family, Harry Tuthill.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it'll be a collection of his Sundays and also a Milk Roast book that I'm writing with Mark Newgarden. So, you know, there's stuff. It also kind of depends on the status of the material, like what kind of material can be found. In the case of the Bungle Family, there's a guy in St. Louis who, remarkably enough, has hundreds and hundreds of hand-colored Sundays, like fully painted.
Wow.
So, you know, so we'll print those. And so that makes a really exciting book. And Milk Roast, there's tons and tons and tons of stuff. And Hayes as well. So, you know, it's kind of like what makes a compelling volume and not just sort of what I really love. So,
whereas with some of the stuff in your book, you've reprinted, I could be wrong here. Is it the Wiggle Much, where you've pretty much printed everything that's in existence of the Wiggle Much?
Well, everything I could find. Mm-hmm. I am certain that there's more in existence, just because, you know, there are more complete runs of those newspapers, but not accessible to me. I know Rick Marshall, for example, has some, and I suspect has some, rather, just because he has runs of those newspapers. But not everybody is willing to share, shall we say, and some of it is just plain buried. I mean, it's just not accessible. They're in archives that are not accessible, or in private collections that are not accessible, and I think there is more, but, you know, it's a funny, when you kind of dig back into this stuff and you get into the world of collectors, it becomes funky in not always fun ways.
You find people who are definitely more stuck in their ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually really fun, but frequently, you know, somebody has the idea that, well, they're going to do a book somewhere down the line. So they'll give you 5 of a strip and keep 2 for themselves. You know, it's just like, it's weird.
Now,
because it sort of runs counter to the idea of, you know,
getting it out into the world. Question, though, with the publication of this book, now I've noticed the bios sections are great in the back. It's so nice to have bios on all of these artists. Have you found out any new biographical info since the publication,
well,
or even stuff for new discoveries
Crowley,
for Volume 2?
I found out some more, and I've got a few leads on him.
On who?
And a few others, yeah. I've turned up some other articles, and George Carlson's grandson actually contacted me.
Oh.
And he has an archive, and yeah, some more, absolutely.
Will that new info be, for example, put on your comics blog that you have?
Oh, well, that's a good idea.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I'd love to know more info about these. Some of these
people. I haven't thought of that, but okay. I'll do it. Yeah, I should do that, and I just need to kind of get organized. I'm a little bit. Well, I've just been sick, but I've also kind of doing my year-end accounting this week. So yeah, I'm a little behind on my actual.
Well, you're very busy.
Fun stuff.
You're a pretty busy guy, though, looking at all the projects you have. You have the comics, the mag you put together. You've also got the Gansfeld. Did I pronounce it right? And that's like, I guess it's like an academic art journal focusing on comics work. Like, what's the kind of concept behind that?
Well, the Gansfeld is been around since like 2000. It's not academic. It's just, it's like art and comics and illustration and design and, it's sort of articles and examples and artist projects and things like that. It kind of runs the gamut, really, of all kinds of things. Comics I do with Tim Hodler, and that's more, it's somewhere between, I don't know what it is, really.
It's sort of a strange, well-researched
kind of like
esoteric.
Writing about comics that we're interested in, and kind of trying to create some forum that is accessible and kind of, I don't know.
Well, that's something
enthusiastic, but still critical. I'm not sure.
That's something actually I want to touch on really quickly. Like, we're pretty much running out of time here. But,
yeah.
Is that it is a forum there, but it's like, it really reminds me of like some of the limits with the comics community, because your criticisms of work seem to get people, you know, their hairs sticking up and getting really angry about saying, I don't like a book.
Right.
With the Fun Home debate, I guess, that was raging on there. But that, it's like, I don't want to talk about the Fun Home part. It's more of the how I find it odd that people just can't really have a conversation so much. It's like people seem to really get really personal into, like, why don't you like that book?
Yeah, I found that a little surprising myself, but I don't know what, I don't know. I mean, it's funny. I'm amazed that people get that annoyed. I mean, when I read somebody doesn't like something, I just figure they didn't like it.
Well, you're certainly not guilty of I mean, you're certainly, you champion a lot of stuff that seems to, old and new, that really seems to actually further the form and actually really play with the comic narrative, I've noticed, in most of the stuff you champion.
Right. No, yeah, I mean, the stuff I'm really interested in is sort of coming at comics as a medium just to do anything. And I suppose what I get suspicious of is kind of, is imposing kind of
standards.
No, I just I'm interested in kind of an open model of comics that's not super uptight and not guided by kind of very strict formal conventions, which is sort of runs counter to, I guess, like a McLeod model of comics or something like that. I'm interested in it as sort of in the way that you might look at painting, or you might look at
As an art form.
It's more
of an art form and less of a kind of, I don't know, teenager kind of fascination.
Less of like a constrictive genre.
No, I totally.
Yeah.
You have to run.
Yeah, unfortunately, the boys in the hip-hop show are in the hallway.
Again, I'm so sorry. I've just been, like, super ill. And
our hearts go out.
We hope you're feeling better, but before you go,
I've been asleep.
Well, we hope rest up. We hope you're feeling better. But before we go, what is your Blogspot address so people can go to it?
It's comicscomicsmag.com.
Great.
Awesome. Check it out, Comics Comics. Is that going to be available in all comic stores soon?
Not all, but you can get it off the website.
Okay. Awesome.
All right.
Have a good day,
Apologies
Dan.
Apologies again.
Okay.
Hope you feel better.
Bye.
Inkstuds. Radio show about comics. We're over time. I'm sorry. Crimes and Treasons to stay in the hallway and giving me dirty looks. They're not giving me dirty looks. Those are sweet boys. Love you guys. They're not even looking at me. Next week, my guest will be Denny Eichhorn. I do feel bad. I hope you feel better, Dan. And
I knew it was a good reason.
Of course it's a good reason.
Remember I was saying that? I'm going, I bet it's a good reason. He's sick. I hope he feels better.
I hope he feels better, too. I'm going to end off with Fugazi, the argument, Inkstuds, next week, Denny Eichhorn, real stuff, some of the best stuff out there. Crimes and Treasons up next.